My guest today is a college professor who teaches humans how Gen AI works. So when she spent 6 weeks testing Dai AI, my digital clone, I kind of braced myself for the review. Her biggest takeaway after all that? And here's the part I didn't see coming. She's still using it. Today on ADHD-ish, a certified skeptic tells you exactly what an AI coach is good for, where it falls short, and how to make it earn its keep. So, you didn't come to this whole situation as a fan, by any means. You're a professor, and your job, among other things, is teaching people how Gen AI works. So you've described that as a bit of a love-hate relationship with these tools. They're possibly surveilling you, they're burning through our environmental resources, and so forth. So let's start this conversation with your honest assessment of what you expected when you signed up for Dai AI.
I didn't have a lot of expectations when I first started, but I had some hopes. So I had finished my 6 month coaching engagement with you about 3 months beforehand, and I was excited to dive back in because I met my midterm goals and I knew I needed an accountability partner to set up my next set of goals and organize my work. And I learned all the tools from you, but just because I have the tools doesn't mean I'm going to use them.
Do you think there was a moment where you're like, okay, I know I need some accountability support. I have all kinds of mixed feelings about AI in general, but I'm willing to experiment?
Oh, even more than that. I'm a skeptic, but I'm also was excited to experiment because I wanted to see how it worked. And before I jumped in, I went to listen to your podcast where you were talking about cloning yourself and your excitement about having this tool to clone yourself. Because I have this background of experience and know how AI works, I thought it would be a great opportunity for me to check out your clone for you and do a little bit of investigative work, seeing how it worked for me, but also give me the opportunity, if you were willing, which you are, to give feedback to you and share my experience with others. So I'm excited that you had me on the podcast today.
It's actually really a gift because you know how it is as an entrepreneur, in addition to being an academic. You create something and you think it's really rad, and there's no telling how the public is going to feel until someone actually kicks the tires and tells you what their experience is. So this is as much a gift to me as it is an opportunity for you. And also because you approach this like a real professor, like a person who understands the scientific method. First of all, I think a lot of people just sign up impulsively, ADHD, totally get it. They open up a chat and then they're like, what do I say? So now I've created a starter guide. But they'll say, well, I'm overwhelmed. What do I do? Or how do I deal with my procrastination? Or how do I get organized? They just wing it. But you built an entire protocol. You had a dedicated hour every week. You committed yourself for a 6 week period. You had the timer running. You had specific goals before you'd ever even opened up a chat or typed a single word. I know you. I know how you think. I know how you operate. But why did you feel that that level of structure was necessary for this? And having run through the experiment, what difference do you think it actually made?
Well, at one point in my life, my husband said I should be a professional beta tester because I'm good at breaking things. So I don't think I shared that with you before, but I always thought through that. When we were first dating, he worked at a computer renaissance. So he had a network going in our house in 1998. And I said, why would we ever need more than one computer? It's insane. I wonder if I would just be a hippie living in a van without power right now if I wasn't married to him. So bless him for being my number one tech support. So this was a fun opportunity for me. It's because I like to think, understand how things work. You know, it's that I can't just put one toe in the water. I have to jump in with 2 feet. Does that sound familiar to you from?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
So I did some really great rationalization about how if I jumped in with 2 feet on this, then maybe I can leverage that as I'm honing what I'm doing with my consulting and advising, because it's fun. This is an awesome, fun project for me to see how does this AI work? How can I use it? So I can use a little bit more. It'll help me be a better professor and also helps me give back to you because I really appreciated our information that I learned from you during our coaching sessions.
This is fantastic. Okay. What I'd love to do, Elizabeth, is break it down kind of week by week, because I think there are really interesting and relevant takeaways, insights, examples from each of the weeks. So starting with week one, you brought 4 goals to a single hour session, something that we laughed about this so many times during our work together. And oftentimes you knew I was about to say it and you would just blurt it out and we'd both laugh. Wildly unrealistic expectations. It's something I associate so much with you because you have big plans, big ideas, big goals, and oftentimes they're wildly unrealistic. So you brought 4 goals to the first hour, but you also had the insight that, you know what? I have a little bit of time this summer. I think I could rebuild my course. So in your own words, you could start the next semester strong and calm instead of scrambling. You called it stupid common sense. The stupid common sense thing you never would have thought of on your own. Can we go back to the moment of that insight?
Yeah, that insight was actually from .ai because I was creating my buckets of work that I needed to work on over the summer. And when I was creating those buckets, I asked for feedback about how to prioritize them, or the chat back and forth between me and AI was about how I could prioritize them. That's actually what the AI came back with. The AI came back with, well, what if you started your next semester cool, calm, collected? And I like to say this feeling of calm power. And I love that. That feels like that me, right? Right at the after my midlife crisis, I come at things from this place of calm power. And so I hated that the AI was like, here, how about if you started this semester from this place that you want to be at? And I'm like, I didn't even tell you that. How do you know that? I was so mad that it hit the nail right on the head. And then it was common sense, but it was completely clueless for me. Like every semester I wait, now I know that I can probably prep for a semester and I'm not going to tell you how many hours because this is going to be publicly available hours before the semester starts if I've already taken the class before. And I know that I could do better if I could better manage my time, man, but it's a hard thing for me to do. And I'll just elaborate a little bit. I found similar things about the way that I've been working for the last 45 years of my life before I had my diagnosis. Like, seriously, I don't think it ever occurred to me that I should put everything away and finish something that I started. I mean, talk about common sense. Like, it just didn't occur to me. Like, oh my God, what would happen if I cleaned up the kitchen and put all the dirty dishes away right when I was done with that? Like, oh my gosh, the day that you helped me last fall where I read one of your notes and I closed down all of my browsers for the night and I turned on my computer the next morning and I thought it was broken because there were no browsers open. Total common sense. And so I think that's a great place where something like DIAI can help. Like, here's a mirror, here's common sense way over here. We're not asking for rocket science. I just need something to remind me about common sense, preferably not my husband that's nagging me about it. So, yeah.
I think you are still being a little bit hard on yourself. I realize that a year and a few months out from your diagnosis, this is kind of where we're at with the information. You're coming through and out of the stage where you're like, oh my God, first of all, why the fuck did I figure this out sooner? Why did I do that? It sure would have been great if I'd known this sooner. And then when you start realizing that there are easier ways to figure things out, easier ways to get things done, easier ways to spare your nervous system from all the drama and trauma, then you can oftentimes feel kind of dumb. Like, I'm a smart person. You are a very smart person. You are a highly educated person. And it's like, this is too easy. I think that's probably why we didn't figure it out. And it's really hard to explain to someone who's not built like us that it's not like we considered that option and thought, nah, it never crossed our minds, which is even harder to figure out. And I'm going to guess that that may have something to do with why week two, in spite of your planning, never happened. You blew off your appointment with DIAI because, I quote you, I knew DIAI wouldn't be mad. And after all, there was a 30-minute shiny project that ended up swallowing 2 days that simply didn't leave room for DIAI. So what did ghosting, the AI version of me, teach you about accountability that spending 6 months with me as your human coach didn't?
So when I worked with you, one of the most insightful things I did is do that, the motivational, what motivates you? What's that from again?
Is it the 4 drivers? Yeah. Interest, challenge, novelty, and urgency. Yeah.
Yeah. Those, and that I categorized me when I did that quiz as a rebel, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yep. So as a rebel, I didn't know I was a rebel. I thought that I was one of the, I had to be taught something, but I just didn't know what motivated me. And now I know nothing motivates me. So what ghosting DIAI meant for me is that because I'm not intrinsically motivated or extrinsically motivated, right? That means that I have to really closely align and remind myself of why I'm choosing to do something and how it's aligned to my values. I love that you trained DIAI so the algorithm knows that. And when I fed that into a later conversation that said, okay, that makes sense. So let's connect this next thing that you're trying to do to your values. And so that was very helpful in that case. And because I have to do something completely aligned to my values, if I was going to stay true to DIAI as an accountability partner, I would have had to do a better job of tying this meeting time to my values, to say my value is to really hit this 6 times in a row because it's really important to keep those dates. And I didn't do enough deep thinking to actually make those hard connections in my head to get me to show up on time or fully deliver. Because, you know, I made it up. I made up that we should meet once a week for 6 weeks. And since I made it up, I know I can change it.
Exactly. That's a rebel for you. Yeah. Actually, what you're referencing, Elizabeth, is how I, as a former psychotherapist who deeply believes that no matter what type of business we are creating, it needs to really be holistically aligned with who we are as human beings and not just our ADHD. So I start off my 6 month coaching engagements with some of the things you are indirectly referring to now. One is a values assessment, so that your values will always be a filter in what you say yes to and how you spend your time. I also do the 4 tendencies assessment, which is what revealed that you are a rebel to yourself. And knowing that, we know, you know, what does a rebel need in order to take action? Because the 4 tendencies framework is all about accountability and what you need to feel accountable. And rebels are the hardest group to build that in because, like you said, well, I made it up and so I can change it. But I love that you're really using these things in a practical way and that training and fine-tuning DIAI with all of those things in mind. I can see why my former clients and current clients are the ones who are really getting the most out of talking to DIAI because it reinforces everything they already learned from me. So week 3, you have a new challenge. You gave it a test, 10 more minutes to pull you out of a rabbit hole before you'd redirect it yourself. And it passed. And then it failed a different test telling you, yep, I'd say we nailed it about a session goal it had mostly forgotten. So AI is not perfect, just as humans are not perfect. Sometimes I think we expect them to be, especially when we're the ones who trained them. Where did you land on what you could expect DIAI to do well and where the human still has to drive?
Well, I'd like to go back first to the comment you made before you asked the question. And that comment was about how you've done some training with DIAI as a coach and that it's able to incorporate that training. And I was speaking with a friend and colleague yesterday, and she said, who do you use for a coach? Are you using ChatGPT? Are you using Gemini? And I said, no, I'm using a real coach that was trained by my coach, a real AI coach, because this AI coach is still not perfect, DIAI, but DIAI is trained on your 30 years of experience doing therapy and your 10 years of experience doing coaching and your deep knowledge of ADHD. And why would I listen to a random algorithm that is really just doing connections. So really, it's just likelihood, right? What word comes next? What letter comes next? What sentence comes next? That's all ChatGPT and Gemini are. Even if I do a really good prompting with that, that's giving me generic advice. Where I came down to, where can DIAI be helpful? Well, let's compare it to those first. This is much more helpful tool than a generic tool and worthwhile because it's trained on that expertise, your specific expertise. So that makes it very valuable.
This whole notion when you are building something new, especially anything with tech, you know, the notion is just ship it, minimum viable. And oftentimes you're putting things in front of real humans and asking them to use it before you really know if it's good or not. I spent 6 months building this thing and I still released it with my fingers crossed, but where it's going to get better, where in fact it already is getting better, is with this kind of feedback. So note to anybody listening who's thinking about building any kind of AI or any kind of tech software, deal with your rejection sensitivity first before you put this thing out in the world. Because if you get butt hurt when people tell you this is what worked well, but this really has a long way to go, it's never going to reach its full potential. And I really want it to be useful, or I would have wished I hadn't spent any time on it all. So I think you know how much I appreciate this. And I think you know how valuable this is. The fact that you took the time to do this just means the world to me. And we all need feedback about everything we think and create and do so we know if it's worthwhile. So, okay, we're going to stop the mutual admiration girl crushing here. And we're going to get on to week four. We go back to your decision matrix, which I love that you created. You said that DIAI worked more as a sounding board or like a thought partner than an assistant, and you couldn't get it to stop giving feedback after every single comment, and that you got there mostly on your own. So make the case. What is having something to bounce ideas off actually worth for the ADHD brain? Because lots of us feel the need for a thought partner, but I don't know about you, when I'm given a download, I do not want that other party interrupting me, making a comment every couple of breaths.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know there's a lot of tips sheets out there that recommend journaling in general for mental health and getting all those ideas out of your brain onto paper. And for me, I don't personally like journaling, and I never do that on a regular basis. I don't dislike it. That just seems like it would be taking advice from someone else, and I'm a rebel, right? So I hate getting insights on a podcast and live. Okay, great. So when I was thinking about it, I'm like, oh my gosh, it actually, like my interactions, maybe were only 10 interactions back and forth because it took me 10 or 15 minutes and I was journaling all my thoughts about a specific question that it had asked. Or I was journaling all my thoughts ahead of time because I wanted to create the perfect prompt for it, so it would do what I wanted it to do. But that force was a great forcing function for me to think through how I'm actually thinking and what's important to me in a way that you might do if you're journaling. And it didn't have to be pretty because, again, the Gen AI, the benefit is it can read through all my messy notes too. So it didn't have to be gorgeous, but the thought that I put into it to make it look as clean as I did was helpful.
And just so you know, I'm going to be sharing all of your feedback and your tip sheet with my mentor, Jody Cook, who is the founder of CoachVox, because it's one of the great things about being an early adopter. Like, I'm an early adopter of CoachVox. You're an early adopter of DIAI. Mm-hmm. When we have an interest or feel any sort of obligation or commitment to want to really figure out how to make this thing work for us, we naturally benefit those who made it. So I am definitely going to be sharing all of this with Jody as well, because she's very eager for it. One of your observations that really, I literally laughed out loud, is when you reached, I think you were by that time in week four, maybe week five, and I think it might have been actually at the very end, and you said, biggest insight, I'm still smarter. And I'm like, that sounds like you. I totally laughed out loud. But you also said that you're glad that AI has no voice mode. I've had a couple people ask me about this, or are you ever going to have this be in voice mode? And are you going to train it to your specific voice? Because an AI friend to chat with in the car every day scares the shit out of you, quote unquote. Talk about the difference between a tool that you use and a relationship you outsource and why that boundary matters so much to you.
Well, I'll jump in with how scared I am that my 15-year-old niece came and visited me for spring break this year. And I asked her a simple question. It was something like, where should we go out to eat tonight? Or what do you think about something? And her response is, I don't know, let me ask chat. That's funny, but scares the shit out of me. That is
sad too.
Oh my gosh. I mean, think about that. She doesn't have enough faith in herself to either do the research herself to find something or voice her opinion because she doesn't think that she's smarter than the AI tool. That makes me so sad. So I think about this a lot, and it's hard because I vacillate between this is awesome. I've actually written a LinkedIn article about what if your human resources team had a chatbot that on the way home from work, you could say, hey, the shift went really well. It didn't go well. You could use it as a little mini therapist, but you could also complain about your boss or your coworker or your things. And then that would just help with scheduling, right, in the future. I mean, that's awesome. But just because the technology is there and can do that, I don't know. It's also very scary that you're outsourcing that to not a human. And in all my feedback to you, I made sure I said it. It's an it. It's not really a clone of Dai. It's an algorithm. It's an algorithm that I like Adam Manastrodi calls it a bag of words. And he has a great blog post on that that you could link to as well. It's just a big, giant bag of words. And it's just, even though it's got your, it's fed with what you know, it is not smarter than I am, right? I am a human and I'm the only person who can put to know everything about myself. I could never teach Dai AI everything about me. And Dai AI can't see my face. They can't see my facial expression. And even if you feed it with all of your knowledge, it can't read my face the way that you can with my reaction. And know when I say that one sentence about my husband that reminds you of the four other people you worked with, with husbands like mine or my job, and help make all of those connections in a way that humans can. And so it really scares me in one perspective, especially if you were to add that voice component to bring it back to your initial question, right? Then would I treat this as a friend who I'm chatting with every time I have a problem? And would that mean I call my sister less often? And then my relationship with my sister wouldn't be as good. And she's a real human who knows my backstory much more than anyone else can. And so I'm a skeptic, but also excited and super scared. Anyway, all of those feelings, all of them.
I'm with you, Elizabeth, 100%. And I think listeners might be surprised to hear me say this because they're like, well, bitch, you made this thing, you put it out and here you are promoting it. But I share 100% of your concerns. I share your fascination and I share your horror because we already know that there are people who are turning to AI chatbots for advice that really needs to be directed to humans. People are using AI chatbots for therapy. I think it's just a matter of time before these major therapy platforms that have been promoting text-based and email-based therapy, instead of even seeing someone across a video screen, much less in their office, it's just a matter of time before they are going to be offering AI therapy at a slightly reduced rate. There are people who actually think they are in a committed, intimate, romantic partnership with AI. I first found out about this on TikTok and I thought it was an AI generated joke. Mm-hmm. It is not. Mm-mm. You know, I spent 20 years of my life as a therapist and as you say, 10 years now as a coach, and I trust my intuition and my instinct as well as my skill, my judgment, and my expertise. There is no way, no matter how well we train AI, that it can or should replace us. I'm also really fascinated and excited and fully exploring how it can assist and supplement us. So I would say you and I probably have many of the same feelings. And at this point, relationship status it's complicated. I want to talk before we run out of time about a conference that you recently attended, and I'm really excited to share one of the talks in particular, because it's very relevant to this discussion. It was the Naturalistic Decision-Making Conference, which you'd have to be some major kind of word nerd to get excited about that. But hey, we're here for it. And you listen to someone named Michael Webb speak about what to ask before engaging with an AI. And I'm like, ooh, that's juicy.
So I was at that conference because I was presenting my dissertation work, which back when I finished my dissertation, I studied human decision-making and how complex human decision-making is. And the reason I even finished all the way through school, as far as I did, number one, I had free army money to go to school because I was in the military. So thanks for paying your taxes so I could use my GI Bill. And the other reason is that I really enjoyed understanding human decision-making and expertise and when we should use IT, specifically in healthcare, but I'm interested in any place. And so my research studied charge nurses and their decision-making, and my study found that when charge nurses are thinking about which nurses should take care of which patients, they use different information on different days. And they use that information in different ways. And even their goals change depending on which nurses are on staff that day and how sick the patients are. And it's complex, right? What we're doing, they think of over 70 items that they think about every time they're just deciding if that nurse should take care of that patient. So I was presenting about that. And I used a framework from Gary Klein, who studied firefighter experts. And he and Daniel Kahneman have a framework about when you should use AI. And this framework kind of builds on both of those frameworks. So the one that Michael presented. And I really needed to pull that together because I'm going to make my students learn it in class this semester, upcoming this fall, because I want them to be thinking through how they should use AI too. One last little tangent related to that is because my students who are taking online graduate level courses are using AI, and I know they're using AI because out of 60 students in my class, 20 had the same answer. That was just like share what happened yesterday answer. So
no.
Yeah. Pick someone and ask them this question. Or pick any patient that's ever had a patient problem that's online. And about 20 of them picked the same two patients, which are the first one that pops up if you ask ChatGPT. And one of the students that took my oral midterm, because I want to have eyeballs on my students, one of them had their ChatGPT up on the side. And I said, are you ready for the first question? And their phone answered, yes, I'm ready for the first question. So I have a lot of concerns about when we should be using AI and when we shouldn't be using AI. Okay, so back to your question. There's a lot out there and people need to think through, when am I using this AI? Am I using it to suggest what to make for dinner? Great. Am I using this to make a major life choice? Make sure that you're getting good advice. So I developed these three questions based off of all of that background that I know and Michael's presentation. So the first one for you specifically about if you're deciding to engage with DAI AI is, does DAI AI have the knowledge required to help you with this problem? What's something that you're not good at, DAI?
Within the realm of my business or just in general?
In general.
I'm really pretty fucking useless in the kitchen.
Yeah. So don't ask DAI AI for kitchen advice or recipe advice, because that's not what it's built for. And if it's based off of Diane Winkert's knowledge, then don't trust that. You'll be like me and
you'll
substitute.
Be sorely disappointed.
Baking soda and baking powder are not even substitutions. Ask me how I know. Okay. So make sure that DAI AI actually has the knowledge required to help you with your problem before you engage. The second one is, does DAI AI understand your goals for the session? So I ran into this when I really wanted it to help me refine my decision matrix, but it didn't stick with that goal very much because it kind of went down its own little therapy-ish kind of thing about what do you want in a decision-making process? What things are important to you? And it kind of pulled itself back there, but it would have been better for me to use DAI AI to help clarify my goals at the beginning of the session. And my favorite way to do that is to have it ask me questions. to make sure that it understands. And that actually goes with my third recommendation is not only does that algorithm, DAI, have the knowledge required to help, does it also understand my goals? And then number three is do you as the user and DAI have a shared digital representation of the situation? Like, does DAI know enough about you and you understand what it understands? So you have this shared representation of what's going on. So when it gives you advice, you can understand where that advice came from and where that advice can be implemented. So for asking five questions, I like that. And then I judge it on its questions. So I'm like, why don't you tell me, ask me five questions about my current decision matrix. And if it didn't ask me five good questions that were on point, then I'd say, yeah, you don't quite get it yet. Let me tell you really what I'm looking for. I'm judging it by its questions to me. Does it seem to get you and get your problem? The same way that if you were interviewing a new coach or a new therapist, does it really get you and get your problem? Are you going to take advice from this thing? The same way you would take advice from a new human you met on the subway or something, right? Are you going to take their advice or not? You need to think about it critically. And going back to what you said that I said earlier, it's not smarter than I am, right? It is not smarter than I am. And even if it gives me the good tinglies when it said good job or it gave me something spot on, in general, it is not smarter than I am. And so that's a good note for me to end that on.
I love everything about this. And I will tell you straight up, Elizabeth, you are the first person who has not only said this about DAI, but who in any conversation that I'm aware of about using AI for thinking through decision-making, problem-solving, organizing our time and our energy. I think you're the first person that I've heard say, instead of just following the prompts, you are inviting the tool to query you. And I understand why you're doing that for all the reasons you've discussed, but also you are a relational person. And DAI, all AI, Claude, ChatGPT, Grok, Gemini, all of them, Perplexity, they're transactional. They are transactional tools that can give us sort of the appearance of a relationship, but they're not capable of one. So you're actually inviting this tool to behave like a relational entity. And it's fascinating to think about how this will evolve over time. And I think what's absolutely necessary, and I'm really glad I hired an attorney to create a very robust terms of use, which some people will say, as soon as I saw that, I'm like, I'm out, because they just want this to be easy, fast, and fun. And listen, I have ADHD too. I get that. But one of my big beefs, you and I have talked about this, I think that the future of humanity really depends on our clinging desperately to critical thinking. And one of the things that seems to be dissipating, like as we speak, is people's willingness to engage in critical thinking. We want everything figured out for us and spoon-fed to us. And I do not want that for this tool. And I know you don't want this for any tool. I want you to consider this one last thing. Someone listening signed up for DAI months ago. I'm sure there are plenty of people because I look at all the analytics. There are a lot of people who thought, oh, cool, something new and doesn't cost any money and it's her, I'll do it. But then they never did anything with it. And this is not to guilt or shame anybody because the number of things I've signed up for and never used, we don't even want to go there. But people do feel guilty when they think, yeah, I probably should at least see what this can do for me. You spent a nice chunk of time with DAI and a lot of intentionality around it. What's one thing you would recommend to someone listening who has access or decides to sign up, because there's going to be a link in the show notes, obviously. What's one thing they could do this week that would actually make it worthwhile to see if this is something that could help them?
I have two ideas for them.
Not just one. Of course you do.
Oh, yeah.
Why just one?
Wildly unrealistic expectations and yes, overachiever all the way in.
It would have been 10. Now it's just two. Okay, I accept.
Yes. Now let's see if my brain can remember either of them after going off on that tangent. So the first thing is I am inspired a lot by your podcast. And so if someone is inspired by a podcast because they're listening to this as a podcast episode, And they have one thing they want to follow up on with that podcast or try to implement from the podcast. A very tractable tool for them would be to say, okay, I'm going to use DIAI plus what I learned in that podcast and help them work that specific thing into my schedule. Okay, how can I incorporate that? And then set a couple of follow-up sessions to say, my goal was to set up a daily schedule. Okay, DIAI, how can I do that? Because these are all the problems I have right now, my kids and my dogs and my husband and the whatever else and the rest of my life, right? And so work through it. Yeah, the chatbot's great for that. Okay, how about this? How about this? Bouncing ideas off each other. And then you could follow back up the next week. Okay, did that work or not? So use it as a champion to help you implement something is one idea that I had. And then I just want to bring it back to my values. Really think about, why did you sign up in the first place? And how does that align with your goals and your values? And if this is something valuable to you, how are you going to incorporate it into your schedule? Because you might have another way of doing that instead of a specific instance. So think about how you're going to use it. And then with that intentionality, where are you going to slip it into your schedule? Is it going to be your champion on the day that you're supposed to be doing bookkeeping? Because, oh my gosh, I need a champion for that day, right? Or is it something that you're checking in with kind of at the accountability level? Or is it something you're going to use for specific projects or when you hit a roadblock and ask for some advice? And then it might say something really obvious to you, like, I don't know, why don't you start on that ahead of time? And then you won't be so stressed out. I'm like, oh yeah, thanks.
This was unbelievably helpful, useful, inspiring. I cannot thank you enough. And I will make sure that we have links in the show notes to everything we've referred to, you know, scribbling them all down. I hope I didn't miss any. And especially your tip sheet, because that's going to be helpful to me. It's going to be helpful to DIAI users. And it's also going to be helpful to the folks that are continuously working to make the platform better for everyone. Elizabeth walked into this experiment fully expecting to break my clone. But 6 weeks later, she's still using it. That's about the strongest endorsement a skeptic can give. But why don't you see for yourself? DIAI is free, and so is the tip sheet that Elizabeth created so you can get the most out of DIAI or any AI coach. Sign up, grab the sheet, and start with one goal and a timer. School's out.